welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, bringing you an hour of horror. Later on, a story from the sealed book, but we now turn to Inner Sanctum. This episode first heard on August 31st, 1952 on CBS, called Strange Passenger.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Come in. Say, how about joining our Shriek of the Month Club? We're offering free a shroud-bound copy of Die Alone and Like It. It's about an unsuccessful authoress who dies of marital illness. Yes, her husband got sick of her. However, he was thoughtful enough to bury his novelist wife in the basement. And now, at last, she's in the best-seller class. And now for tonight's gruesome little item. Oh, you better not disturb that fellow in the corner. He's our ghost of honor tonight. Poor guy. He died last night for lack of sleep. Now he's in for a wake. Meet John Thompson, age 29, driving a blue coupe across the George Washington Bridge, heading west.
It's kind of a close night. Heat lightning is dancing up in the sky when I come down off the bridge into Jersey. Running a mobile gas station isn't bad when things are breaking right. But the way things are, I figure I'll do better out west. I hit the highway and let her out of it. I spot her a few miles past the bridge. She's standing there by the side of the road, out in the middle of nothing. I don't know exactly why, but I stop.
Want a lift?
Thanks.
Now, hop in. Going far?
Not very.
Well, yell when you want me to leave you off, huh? My name's Thompson. John Thompson.
Hello, Johnny.
Yeah. Hello. What's your name?
Ann.
Uh-huh. Where in particular are you heading for?
I don't know.
But
I'll know when we get there.
Yeah, sure. Look, this ain't the old routine, but you look like I kind of know you from someplace.
Do I?
I don't remember from where or when, but your face, well, maybe it just reminds me of somebody I used to know. Don't anymore.
Maybe.
You don't remember me, huh?
Should I, Johnny?
Well, it would be kind of more sociable.
I'll try, Johnny.
We go on like that for a couple or 3 miles. Her not saying anything and me sneaking looks at her. She's pretty young and nice to have next to you, but there's this feeling that I ought to know her and don't. And I get to wondering where she's going in the middle of the night. Hey, Ann.
Yes, Johnny.
Maybe we can get some music. The knob for turning on the radio is over on your side. See?
All right.
They got these all-night programs for people like us, you know, driving at night or jockeying a truck or sitting up with a sick friend.
Our next request number, just phoned in this minute by a young lady named Ann. Well, we can't make out your last name, Ann, but anyway, Lou's going right ahead and play it for you. Lou White at the piano, playing Stardust.
He plays a nice piano, huh?
Very nice.
Kind of funny, a girl with the same name as yours just phoning in to the show and we started listening to it. I mean, with the same first name.
Is it?
Yeah, well, I guess it's a coincidence.
I like Stardust.
Maybe you'd better try another station.
Why? I like Stardust.
Yeah, but get another station.
I'm happy with this one.
Get another station or turn the set off. I don't care which. Do what I'm telling you.
Why?
Don't ask me why. I can't take that music. It bothers me. Now, will you please?
No.
I said, will you please turn it off?
No.
Look, it's my car. It's my radio. I want you to... Oh, never mind. I'll turn it off myself.
You better watch the road. You might have an accident.
I'll turn it off myself. And now let go of my hand.
No, I don't want you to turn it off.
Let go. I got to keep my other hand on the wheel.
I won't let go. I want you to listen to Stardust. I like it.
But I don't. I'm warning you.
Very pretty.
All right. This is what you wanted.
You're choking me.
I told you to turn it off.
Leah, you've let go of the wheel.
You wouldn't listen to me. No. No, it's too late.
It's all black for a while, and then there were streaks of light through the blackness, and I shook my head. I was conscious again. I'd slid forward under the wheel, and the car hit the tree. Pulled myself up, got out of the car. Look. It wasn't damaged bad. The bumper taken most of the shock when we hit. One fender was crumpled. Then I remembered. Man. She was dead, I knew. I felt her neck give before we crashed. I swallowed hard for a couple of seconds and went back to the car. Looked in. She wasn't there. She wasn't anywhere near the car. She hadn't been thrown clear. She must be dead. Still, she wasn't there. Not anywhere. I drove away. Fast. My head don't feel so good, but I stop thinking as I go through the night. I do puzzles and arithmetic. Multiplication. 49 times 76, 102 times 27. So I won't think. But not thinking isn't easy when you're alone, so when I see a diner, I think that's for me. And I stop and get out. I walk over to the diner. The air's still heavy and the crickets are raising cane. I go in.
Well, I'll be missing.
Java and a hamburger.
Sure, coming up.
Yeah, it's a hot night, ain't it?
Huh? Oh, I didn't notice you're sitting next to me. Yeah, it's plenty hot.
You're driving a nice car. I notice you're pulling in.
That's all right.
Hey,
Yeah, it looks good.
Say, Joe, I was wondering, you going far?
Far enough.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. West.
Uh-huh.
How about me riding with you for a bit? My feet are getting awful tired holding me up.
Well, sure, I guess so.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I could use a... the company for such...
Hey, you dropped your coffee.
I'm sorry. Did I get any of it on you?
No, you missed, but your hands are trembling.
Well, I'm tired. Come on, let's get out of here. Hey, that'll take care of my check.
But hey, you ain't finished your hamburger.
I'm not hungry.
Well, you mind if I work it over?
No, of course not. Only let's get out of here.
Sure is a dark night, huh?
Hurry up, will you?
Yeah. Dark enough to hide a corpse in.
So, what did you mean back there by dark enough to hide a corpse in?
Nothing. Just an expression. Why?
That seemed like a funny thing to say.
I don't think so. Hey, you better slow down. We're going through a town.
That's deserted this hour of night.
No, it ain't. Look at that, down near the corner.
Huh? Where?
You seen her, huh? Standing under that lamppost. Pretty as a picture, ain't she? Hey, slow down, will you? Maybe she wants a lift.
You're crazy.
Well, look, she's giving us the thumb. We're going to pass her in a minute.
Anna, don't bother me.
Yeah, but... Hey, she's calling you. She knows you. You can't pass up a girl like that.
Will you shut up?
I don't get it. you was willing to give a hobo like me a lift and you don't even know me. You know that
she's
girl.
Not there. She can't be.
Well, you seen her.
No.
You looked where I was pointing. You heard her.
No. All right, yes, I did, but she's not real. She couldn't be.
Why?
She's dead.
Yeah, how do you know?
Because I can... Because I saw her die.
Yeah?
Yeah, in an accident. 100 miles from here.
Well, then what was she doing under that lamppost?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was a ghost. Maybe I'm going crazy.
I seen her.
Then maybe you're dead, too. And a ghost riding with me.
Well, well, look at you. Chips off an old block of ice. Splinters from the petrified forest. Or are you always that way? Hmm? Oh, you're not really frightened. Just pretending, huh? Well, then suppose you climb down off that chandelier and listen to the rest of the story about John Thompson, who took a girl for a boogie ride. John and the bum he'd picked up rode on for a while in silence. Night was closer and heavier, and John was tired.
Hey, watch it, will you?
Oh, sorry. I closed my eyes for a second.
Well, you better keep them open. It's healthier.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of pooped. It's been a long night.
That chatter about ghosts.
Yeah?
How come?
Oh, I was kidding.
You were, huh? It wouldn't be because...
How would you like to get out?
I'd like it fine. I get nervous riding with a guy who turns green when you mention corpses. Hey, watch that bridge! Hey, you nearly dunked us in that stream.
I can't keep my eyes open. What if I wash my face, bathe my eyes with cold water?
Yeah, that's an idea.
Yeah, you can stay in the car. It'll only be a couple of seconds.
Oh, I'll go along. I could use a drink.
Yeah, water. Looks good. Dark, peaceful. You know, you could sleep in water like that.
Yeah, sure, but you wouldn't wake up. Go on, wash.
Huh? Oh, yeah. That's too swell.
Sure.
It's cold. It's good.
Uh-huh. Good for what ails you. But what does ail you, mister?
Nothing. I'm tired, that's all. It's getting sleepy. I'm better now.
Okay.
Well, let's get back to the car.
I'm walking the rest of the way.
What?
Yeah.
But
I want to get there.
There's nothing wrong with my driving.
I didn't say there was, mister. But are you sure there ain't something wrong with you?
All right. Walk. I don't need anybody to ride with.
No, mister. You already got somebody or something riding with you.
So I walked back to the car. Get in. And I'll pay no attention, the old bum said. There's nothing wrong with me. Nothing. Start the car and drive off. Down the highway into the darkness. It's a long night. Maybe the longest night I ever lived. But it's only night someplace, west of New York, and that's all. The storm hanging overhead, never breaking. That's all.
Hello, Johnny.
It's her. Sitting right next to me. When she saw me looking at her, she smiled.
Hello, Johnny.
Oh. I didn't expect to see you again.
No, Johnny.
I left you so far behind.
Not so far behind.
Yeah, but I guess you must have got a lift on some other car, a faster car than mine, huh? That's how you got ahead of me.
Way ahead of you, Johnny.
Now, that's the way it was. Sure. You're...
You're all right, though?
I'm all right. Very all right.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, Ed. I mean, funny, ain't it? Hey, the rain's still holding off, you know. You're not going to have sworn it had poured hours ago.
Why are you talking so much, Johnny?
Because I'm afraid, Ed.
When will we get there, Johnny?
Get where?
Where you're going.
I don't know. Why?
Because I'm going there with you.
Oh. Yeah?
What?
Nothing. Back again. That song's back again. I don't have to take it. I can't take it. She ought to sing that song. I told her I didn't like it. I'm not going to tell her again. It won't do any good. This time I'm going to play it smart and sure. She's looking straight ahead, watching the road slide under the headlights. So I choked the car. Hey!
What is it, Johnny?
Motor. There could be something wrong.
Oh.
Yeah, I better get out and see.
I'll wait here.
Sure. Get the hood up.
Yes?
Yeah, I can fix it, but will you bring me the wrench?
Where is it?
In the dashboard compartment.
All right. I've got it, Johnny.
Swell. Will you bring it to me?
Here it is, Johnny.
Thanks. Now all I have to do is... Hey.
Hmm?
What's that behind you?
Where?
Well, turn around. You'll see.
All right.
So she turns her back to me. Looks down the road we came. And I lift the heavy wrench. And I...
No!
This time I made sure. She's dead. Lying in the road. But I still gotta make sure she won't, even dead, be riding with me again. So I lift her up. Put her back in the car. Get in myself next to her. Yeah, start the car up. I remember this dream. It's not much of a dream, but deep enough for a thin girl to lie in. That's where I go. It don't take long to get back to the stream, the bridge over it, which is where I stop. Nobody around. Only the darkness and the water flowing underneath where Anne is going to lie. But before I let her go, I dig out my tools. Tire iron, wrenches, a jack, heavy stuff. Tie them to her so she'll lie quiet under the water. When I get done. She's heavy now. Heavier than she ever was before. But I lift her over the rail and hold her for a second in my arms. And then I let her go. She drops quick and not awful loud into the water. Drops to the bottom of the stream, where maybe it'll be soft and cool for her. And I gotta get away from here fast. Fast! Every time the wheel turns around, every time the valves open and close, every time the sparks fire, I'm getting further away from her. This time she isn't going to follow me. This time she's deep under the water with irons tied to her and her head bashed in. Never turn around again and find her sitting next to me. I'd never hear her calling Johnny again. I'd never see her eyes or her thin body again. Clouds are pressing down now. No more moon. Thunder's purring closer like a big cat. I don't care. I'm through with her forever now. I'm so happy I could sing. La 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 la. Oh no. The skies are opening up. The light is turning off and on like God's neon sign. The thunder's pounding in my head. I go faster. Hit a curve. Take it at 60. Standing there, lit by the lightning is... gas pedals down to the floor. The motor's roaring like 100 horses screaming. We're pulling up the hill with the rain slanting against the windowpane like 1,000,000 fingers tapping on my brain. At the top of the hill, swept by the wind, her wet dress plastered against her body.
No.
I can't take it much more. The car sliding down the wet road like death on butter. And she's there all the time now, running with the car, face plastered against the closed window next to my seat.
Johnny.
Anya, you're dead.
Am I, Johnny?
You're dead. I killed you, don't you remember?
No, Johnny.
Back there, I hit you. I dropped you into the water. I hit you. You're dead.
Am I, Johnny?
No, not now, Ann. Please, please.
Aren't you tired, Johnny? Tired of running away? Isn't the road too long? The road away from me?
Go away. Go away, Ann.
No.
Do you want to drive me mad?
No, Johnny.
Then what do you want?
Just to go with you to the end of your road.
But where's that?
Why, maybe here. Maybe right here. In this town, Johnny. In this town.
Yeah. It's a town. A small place, and I'm riding through it. The storm dying out. Dying out. Yeah, and the air's clear now, fresh after the storm. Ann? No, she's gone. Now, the thing is, where? Oh, right up ahead. Sure. They always have one. Yeah, with a green light shining over the door. Always open. And there's always a sergeant half sleeping in the chair behind the desk. Hello?
Oh, what do you want?
My name is John Thompson.
All right, so your name is John Thompson. So what?
If you check, I think you'll find that I'm wanted.
Wanted? For what?
For the murder of my wife, Ann Thompson.
Huh? Hey. Don't move. I've got you covered.
I killed her in our apartment in New York City.
Come on. Stick your hands out.
When I killed her, the radio was on. They were playing Starter.
How'd you like our new arrangement of Starter? We're billing it this week as tune number one of the murderer's hot parade. With, of course, a boogeyman beat on a new grave lane. Oh, yes. Before I stop off for a little chat with John in that one-way death cell of his, let me give you a bit of homicidal advice. Never kill your wife with the radio on. Tune in later. Well, friends, it's time once again to close that creaking door. Until next week at this same time, when we'll be back with a little hunk of horror. You'll be sure to listen, won't you? Until next week, then. Good night. Pleasant dream.
Inner Sanctum has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 31st, 1952 on CBS. It would be 5 episodes later that the show would go off of the air for good after producing 527 episodes over the course of 11 years. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a story from the sealed book. This mutual broadcast heard on June 10th, 1945. From Mysterious Traveler writers Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan, it's The Ghost Makers.
The sealed book. Once again, the keeper of the book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds, strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of two scoundrels who would stop at nothing for money. A tale called The Ghost Makers. Here is the tale, The Ghost Makers, as it is written in the pages of the sealed book. It is an autumn afternoon in the ancient New England village of Wilton. In an old stone house a mile from the town, Agatha Wainwright is serving tea to her nephew Ned, and a little man Ned has introduced as Professor Piedmont, a friend who has come to spend a few weeks with them while he works on a book to be called Old Graveyards of New England.
So this is your graveyard, friend Ned. He looks like a man who'd be happy staring at tombstones.
They make a fascinating study, Miss Wainwright.
Well, I'll take your word for it, Professor Piedmont. Myself, I'd rather read about them in a book.
The professor not only writes books, Auntie, but he's also an expert on psychic phenomena.
Psychic phenomena, eh? Oh, you mean ghosts. Foolish fiddle-faddle, dreamed up by silly people without the brains to know better.
Ah, but Miss Wainwright, I assure you, you are wrong.
Oh, nonsense. When a person's dead, he's dead. And I see anything I'm willing to call a ghost, I'll know I'm crazy and I'll admit it.
Why, Auntie, this very house is supposed to be haunted. You know that.
Oh, rubbish. This is a perfectly normal house. I've lived here a month, and I haven't heard so much as a board squeak.
Ah, but Miss Wainwright, that may be only because you're new to the house and not yet sensitized. It takes time to become aware of occult influences.
Oh, stuff and nonsense. Who started all this talk about ghosts, anyway? Here, now let's have some tea, and no more talk about ghosts.
Well, Ned, now that we're alone, suppose you tell me a little more than you put in your letter. I'm still not sure why you sent for me.
All right, Professor. This is the gist of it. 3 months ago, Aunt Agatha's brother died, leaving her an estate of $400,000.
Mm.
And I'm Auntie's only living relative.
I see. Yes, light begins to dawn.
No, wait. My uncle arranged his will so that Aunt Agatha gets only the interest, about $20,000 a year, and this house to live in. On her death, the entire estate goes to charity. I'm cut off without a penny.
I see your uncle didn't like you, Ned. A shrewd man. Very shrewd.
Yes, he was making sure I couldn't get my hands on any of it. But that's where you come in.
Hmm?
If Aunt Agatha were to become, shall we say, ill, mentally ill...
So that she was incompetent to administer the estate, you mean?
Exactly. If Aunt Agatha were to lose her mind through shock or fright... Who but me, her only relative, would be the logical one to administer the estate for her.
You would, then. Then you'd have the whole income for as long as she lived.
Yes, and part of the principal, too. I know ways to manage it. But I've got to get my hands on some of it before the end of the year, or I'm sunk. I owe a little money, about $25,000. If I don't get it quickly, well, the people I owe it to are rather short-tempered.
I understand. Yes, Ned, I remember when I knew you in Chicago. You liked to gamble, didn't you? But that's your affair. Personally, I prefer to stick to my own profession, creating ghosts.
Yes, I've heard of some of your jobs, Professor, and some of the ghosts you've created to order.
Yes, I pride myself on having a unique occupation, Ned. I believe I'm the only ghost maker there is. And the ghosts I've created have been effective, too.
So I understand. Now, what I want you to do is this. I want Auntie frightened to the point
yes,
where she...
Yes, yes, I understand. Well, Ned, it's going to be difficult. She's a tough-minded woman, hard to scare, hard to drive insane.
That's got to be done. I've got to get my hands on the estate. If you succeed, Professor, there's $5,000 in it for you.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ned, I'll try. It won't be easy, but she may crack suddenly when the time comes. That type does, you know.
Good. That's settled, then. You brought everything you're apt to need?
All my apparatus and gadgets are in my trunk. They'll be here tomorrow. I'm not altogether sure I like this job, Ned.
I hope you're not going to turn moral on me, Professor.
No. There's something about this place that disturbs me, though. You know, I am psychic at times. Not altogether a faker.
Next, you'll be scaring yourself with your own stories.
As we were driving past that old cemetery this afternoon, I suddenly felt a premonition and a chill. The kind of chill you're supposed to feel when you go near the place you'll someday be buried.
Oh, it was just the wind. Yeah, we'll have to get you some red flannels. Here. Here's something that'll give you your courage back. Drink it down.
Ah. Yeah, that does me good. Of all the different kinds of spirits, I prefer those in bottles.
I thought you'd like it. Now let's go downstairs again. We won't talk about ghosts anymore tonight. But tomorrow night, who knows what may come knocking at Aunt Agatha's door.
The following evening, Ned and the professor joined Aunt Agatha by the fireplace, where she sat knitting. Outside, a cold winter wind blew.
Oh, listen to that wind. We may be in for a storm.
We're in for an early winter, that's what. First snow will fall any day now.
Yeah, it's good to have a fireplace to sit by when the wind blows like that.
Here's the cider and donuts, ma'am.
Very well, Emmy. Bring it right in.
Ah, cider and donuts. Just what we need on a night like this.
Will you have a glass, Mr. Ned?
Oh, yes, thank you, Emmy.
Will you have some cider, Professor Peed, Mom?
Professor, Emmy's trying to give you some cider.
Excuse me. I was listening. Thought I heard someone knocking on the front door.
Someone knocking?
Well, there is someone there.
Well, they can't be very anxious to get in, if that's all the noise they can make.
Shall I go see who it is, Miss Agatha?
Yes, girl, go see, though I can't imagine who'd be calling at this hour of the night.
Sounded like someone who didn't expect to get in anyway. A timid child, or maybe a ghost.
Yes? Yes, who is it? Why? Miss Agatha!
Well?
There wasn't anyone there.
No one there? Of course there was. Someone knocked, didn't they?
But I opened the door and there wasn't anyone there.
Then who was knocking? Answer me that.
I don't know. But it wasn't anyone... anyone you can see.
Emmy, I'll stand for no foolishness now.
No, ma'am. But just the same, there's nobody at the door.
Someone's playing tricks on us and I'm going to see who it is.
I'll come with you.
You won't find anybody there.
Yes, well, we'll see. Well... what is it? What do you...
There isn't anyone here.
No, but there was. They slipped away into the bushes. That's what they did.
Yes, of course. Some small boys playing tricks, I suppose.
If I catch them, I'll tan their hides.
Who was it, Miss Wainwright?
Just some boys playing tricks, Professor. That's all it could have been. Come on, Professor. Drink your cider.
What? Oh, Yes, yes, ghost.
Professor, you look like a man who was listening to something then. What was it?
No, I assure you. I
am too old not to know when a man is lying, Professor Piedmont. What were you listening to?
To tell the truth, I thought I heard voices.
What kind of voices?
Far away voices, crying something I couldn't make out. I bet it was just the flames in the fireplace. I'm sure it was.
Of course, that's all it was. Well, what do you say we all turn in? This New England air makes me sleepy.
Knocks at the door when there's nobody there. Voices. Yes, it's high time we were all in bed instead of sitting around here imagining such nonsensical things.
Highly pleased with their first effort in creating ghosts that didn't exist, Ned and Professor Piedmont went to bed. But before they retired, they held a brief, low-voiced conference in Ned's room.
Well, Professor, that door-knocking act was all right. You did it very nicely.
Yes, Ned. An ordinary length of black thread run through a crack in the window sash and attached to the door-knocker can create a very satisfactory ghost indeed.
Now tell me, what comes next on the program?
Well, we can't work too fast. Tomorrow, the hired girl, Emmy, will spread the story of tonight's happenings. The whole town will start talking about it.
Good. And then?
And tomorrow night, nothing happens. Aunt Emmy is reassured. But tomorrow, I'll be busy. I noticed today there's an old hollow tree in the woods about 100 feet from the house.
What about it?
I'll run wires to it, hiding them under the leaves, and install a small loudspeaker in it. I'll conceal the microphone and batteries behind the drapes in the living room.
I see. So 2 nights from now, we'll hear ghostly voices, eh?
Exactly. They'll accompany the ghostly knocks on the door. But that won't be all. There'll be other surprises on the program.
Professor, remind me to tell you sometime that you're about as unpleasant an old rascal as I've ever met.
The next evening, Agatha Wainwright listened nervously for a repetition of the ghostly knocks. But nothing happened, and she regained her composure. The evening following that, however, as she and Ned and the professor sat in the living room around the fire...
9 o'clock. The evening may just be starting in New York, but here in Wilton, it's bedtime. Seems to be someone at the door.
So there is.
Shall I go?
No, Emmy can answer the door. She does little enough to earn her money. Emmy? Emmy?
Yes, Miss Agatha?
There's someone at the door. See who it is, please.
Must I, Miss Agatha?
Must you, indeed. Answer the door, Emmy.
I'd rather not, ma'am.
Emmy, see who is at the door.
Yes, Miss Agatha. I'm going. Who is it? There's no one there. There's no one there again.
Emmy, get control of yourself.
But I tell you, there's no one there.
Then it's someone playing tricks. That's all you hear, Emmy.
Yes. Yes, Miss Agatha, I hear. But I don't believe it.
Go to your room.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry, Miss Agatha. But there wasn't anyone there.
I hope I'm not going to have to discharge that girl.
Shall I go this time, Auntie?
No, Ned. If the rascals play their tricks, whoever they are, they'll soon stop when they see we pay no attention.
I wonder if I could see them from the window.
Maybe we could trap them if we were to go quietly out the back door and slip around to the front.
What was that? Someone calling.
Really? I don't hear anyone.
It's someone calling to us to let him in.
Strange. I can't hear it.
Oh, you must have heard it, Ned. It was perfectly plain.
There's some voices certain people can hear and others can't. If there's someone calling, we better take a look.
Come on, Addie. We'll see what goes on. Who's there? Show yourself, whoever you are.
The yard's perfectly empty.
No. There isn't a soul in sight.
Both the knocking and the voices seem to have stopped.
Perhaps we ought to search the yard and... And Agatha, look. Down at the edge of the trees.
Lights. 3 balls of light moving around just above the ground.
Really? 3 spheres of light? Dear me, luminous spheres are common manifestations of spiritual presences.
Oh, nonsense. They're just two will-o'-the-wisps, that's all.
Whatever they are, we're going to see. Come on, Professor. If it's a trick, we'll soon know.
Yes, Ned. Wait for me. Don't scare them away. I want to see what they look like.
Ned! Ned, they're rising. They're floating away above the trees.
Aunt Agatha! Annie, are you all right? Shall I get a doctor for you?
What do
you...
I want with a doctor? I'm all right. I'm an old fool carrying on like that. Because of some will-o'-the-wisps or whatever it was. I shan't do it again, I promise you.
You need not be ashamed, Miss Wainwright. Unless I'm much mistaken, we've witnessed a psychic visitation of a kind unsurpassed in my experience.
No stuff and nonsense, Professor. You may believe in spirits, but I don't. I never have believed in ghosts, and I'm not going to start now. It was just that it was, well, unexpected.
In the days that followed, Ned Wainwright and Professor Piedmont found it impossible to shake Agatha Wainwright's iron nerves. Emmy, the hired girl, resigned in terror, but Agatha remained seemingly unmoved. Resolutely, she ignored the ghostly knocks, voices, and footsteps that Professor Piedmont's ingenuity devised. The whole town buzzed with tales of her haunted house, but she refused to pay any attention to them. After a month had gone by, Ned was ready to admit defeat.
Well, Professor, you're a washout. Aunt Agatha hasn't turned a hair at your ghost.
No, Ned, I told you it might take a long time. She's a very strong-minded woman. Believe me, anyone else would have cracked by now.
Well, she hasn't, and she's not going to.
I still say it may happen all at once. She's nervous and distraught. She doesn't sleep well. Every evening she sits listening for ghostly voices, though she won't admit it. But she's made up her mind not to believe in ghosts, and I'm afraid she never will.
Well, what do you suggest? It's the middle of December. I've got to get my hands on her money by the end of the year, and I'm sunk.
We must play our last card. You.
Me? What do you mean?
She's fond of you. You're her only relative.
What are you getting at?
How would she feel if you, her only relative, were to die and come back here as a ghost?
I don't follow you.
My plan is simple. We'll say goodbye to your aunt and drive off as if we were going away. Then, secretly in the night, we'll return to the house.
Yes? And then what?
We'll see to it that she receives a phone call from a friend of mine in Boston. He'll announce to your aunt that you and I have been in an automobile accident, and that we've been killed.
Oh, I see. Yes, I begin to understand.
Immediately after the phone call, we'll knock. She'll come to the door and see us standing there.
And having just heard that we're both dead...
Exactly. And if that doesn't work, Ned, we are defeated. But it'll be a strong mind indeed that can withstand such a shock. A strong mind indeed.
And now to continue the story, as it is written in the sealed book. 2 days later, Ned and Professor Piedmont said goodbye to Agatha and drove away. It was starting to snow as they left, so they made their way by a roundabout route to an isolated roadhouse, and there they spent the day waiting. After darkness had fallen, they started back towards Aunt Agatha's house. By now, there was snow feet deep on the road, and the cold blast of the north wind made even the heated interior of the car uncomfortable.
I'll be glad when this is over, Ned. At the moment, it must be down to zero.
Yes, at least. Well, we're almost there. We'll drive up to within 100 yards of the house and wait in the car with the heater on. What time did you arrange to have that phone call made from Boston?
At 9 o'clock, exactly. We want to knock the instant after she gets it.
Right. Isn't that our turn there?
I think so. The snow makes it so hard to see that...
Professor, look out. We're going off the road.
Ned, are you hurt?
Oh, my ankle. Help me out of here.
Come on. Hurry, Ned, I smell gasoline. The car may catch on fire.
All right. Help me onto the road.
Yes.
What happened?
We skidded down a 10-foot bank and turned completely over.
Well, if you'd watched where you were going, it wouldn't have happened.
I couldn't tell. There was ice under the snow. No, but never mind that. We've got to get to shelter.
And I think my ankle's broken. Yes, I can't step on it.
Here. You can lean on me. But where are we?
A quarter of a mile from Aunt Agatha's. There isn't another house within a mile.
Then come on. We've got to get there quick. Lean on me and help all you can. If we don't get there soon, we'll freeze to death.
Half an hour later, numb with cold and scarcely able to struggle on, Ned and Professor Piedmont staggered up to Agatha Wainwright's house. The windows all had heavy wooden shutters over them, shutters they themselves had helped Agatha put in place to keep out anything that might come knocking at the door in the night. But through the small pane of glass in the front door, light showed as they stumbled thankfully up the steps.
Thank heaven we're here. We couldn't have gone another 100 yards.
Oh, nor I. I'm almost frozen. We've got to get inside.
Yes. Here, help me.
All right. One more step. There. Ned, the phone call from Boston. What time is it now?
Time? Like, it's 9. 9 o'clock exactly.
Then knock quickly. We've got to get inside before that phone call comes.
Inside, Agatha Wainwright heard the knocking, but before she could go to the door, the telephone rang and she answered it first.
Hello? Yes, this is Wilton 317. Boston calling long distance? Yes, I'll hold on. Just a minute. Hello? Yes, this is Miss Wainwright speaking. The Boston General Hospital. My nephew Ned. What is it? What's happened to him? Oh, dead. An automobile accident. Both of them killed? No. Oh, no. Yes, I'm all right. Thank you for letting me know. I'll come in the morning. Ned... killed. Oh, no. No, he can't be.
It's Ned. Let me in.
Ned's dead. He's been killed.
Let me in, please, Aunt Agatha. It's Ned. Let me in.
No. Ned's dead.
Let us in.
No. You can't be Ned. Ned was killed. He's dead.
Aunt Agatha, please.
It must be Ned's ghost. The professor was right. There are ghosts. It's Ned's ghost out there.
Agatha! We're freezing to death out here. Please let us in.
No, you can't come in. You're a ghost. You're Ned's ghost. You can't come in. I won't let a ghost in here. I won't.
The next morning, Ned and Professor Piedmont were found frozen to death beside the house, where they made a vain effort to pry open the heavy wooden shutters that covered the window. You see, Agatha never did let them in. She knew better than to open the door to ghosts. Thank you. now, Keeper of the Book, before you close the great book, show us the tale we tell next time. This one? Ah, yes. Why, this is amazing. It's a tale of murder. Queer, unexpected, fiendish murder. Murder of a very different and unusual kind. A tale such as you've never heard before. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book. The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
The Sealed Book on Tuned to Yesterday from June 10th, 1945 on the Mutual Network. And that wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the Golden Age of Radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.